Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our hosts will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our hosts will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air. This week, we discuss the latest episode, The Ghosts of Mortis.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you all that is Clone Wars. We're here this evening to talk about the finale of the Mortis trilogy, Ghosts of Mortis. Joining me this evening is Nathan P. Butler.
Hello, everyone.
Filling in for Arnie of Star Wars Action News as he gallivants around New York, Jen.
Hello.
And Boy Everest.
Hello, everybody. And if I don't get the rock star's blessing to leave, it'll haunt me forever.
All right. Once again, we are here to talk about Ghosts of Mortis, episode 17 of season 3, episode number 61. We are fully in the downhill slide of that 100 episodes. Production number, season 3, episode 13. Our fortune cookie for this week: he who seeks to control fate shall never find peace. Before we jump into our first impressions, why don't we go ahead and get our episode summary.
We join the Jedi attempting to repair their shuttle so they can finally leave Mortis. As Ahsoka struggles to get the ship in working order, Anakin decides to go pay the father one last visit and get his consent before they leave. Elsewhere, we find the father is laying the daughter to rest. Outside the daughter's crypt, the father encourages Anakin to hurry on his way so that the son cannot gain access to the Jedi's ship and the Jedi themselves to wreak havoc through the universe. When Anakin asks the father what he plans to do, the father reveals that he is resolved that he must kill the son. The father then directs Anakin to go and get the answers to the questions that he has. As Anakin walks, he encounters Qui-Gon Jinn, who unfortunately leaves him with a few more questions than he gives answers. Qui-Gon directs Anakin to a place nearby that is strong with the dark side of the Force. That is to be the next step in Anakin's journey. Back at the ship, Obi-Wan directs Ahsoka to dismantle what she's just repaired on the ship, much to her dismay. Outside the shuttle, Obi-Wan converses with the father, who informs him that whatever is going to happen will happen, because now Anakin has gone to the Well of the Dark Side. In the Well of the Dark Side, Anakin finds the son, who informs him that they don't have to be enemies. This is all a misunderstanding. Back at the ship, Obi-Wan's less than happy to find where Anakin has gone, and despite the protests of the father, he departs to the Well of the Dark Side, leaving Ahsoka to tend to the ship. In the Well of the Dark Side, the son has a gift for Anakin, a vision of everything he will do, from murdering younglings to his wife, the conflict with Obi-Wan, even the destruction of Alderaan. Troubled by what he has seen, Anakin agrees to join the son to bring peace and prevent the horrors that he has seen. Obi-Wan arrives at the Well of the Dark Side to find that he is too late. Anakin has already turned to the dark side. When Obi-Wan asks why, Anakin says that he has seen that it is the Jedi who will stand in the way of peace. When Anakin and the son leave Obi-Wan in the Well of the Dark Side, he calls Ahsoka to disable the shuttle before they can escape with it. Shortly after, Anakin arrives to find the shuttle inoperable. Anakin makes the observation that Obi-Wan, Ahsoka, and the father could be formidable opponents. The son decides to level the playing field, and after ordering Anakin to stay put, he takes off. Once the son is gone, the father appears and questions Anakin as to what he has been shown. When Anakin reveals that he has seen all that he will do, the father says that what has been seen must be unseen for there to be balance. And with a touch to the forehead, Anakin forgets everything that he has been shown. We find that the son has gone to the daughter's grave to retrieve the dagger, presumably to kill the father. Ahsoka and Obi-Wan arrive at the father's monastery to find Anakin has been restored to his former self, but without the memories of what he has seen. They quickly hatch a plan to take care of the son, just as he arrives. After easily fending off Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka, the son is surprised when his father takes the dagger away from him. And then, in a surprising move in itself, the father stabs himself, explaining that his death will take some of the power away from the son. The father leaves him wide open for an attack from Anakin, who pierces the son and the father through with his lightsaber. And as the father dies, he implores Anakin to stay on the path he is on, so that he will bring balance to the galaxy, just as he has done to that planet. And with the father's passing, the planet begins to crumble. And then, with another bright flash of light, we find the Jedi back in their ship, in space, being hailed by Captain Rex.
So let's go around and get everyone's first impressions, or overall impressions, of this episode. And let's start with Jen.
This episode gave me a headache. I was very confused. I feel like they kept contradicting stuff they'd said in previous episodes for this arc, and there were parts of it that I liked. There were parts of it that I thought were really cool, some of the stuff they were talking about with Anakin, but it didn't make sense. There was a lot of stuff that really amazing, and they had said stuff last week, and then they totally changed it. This episode hurt my brain.
All right, Barrett?
Well, what did we really get here? You know, that's how I kind of look at it. And we could possibly get Ahsoka and some cool new goggles, and they could reuse the the welder piece that they've used from the vintage line that came with Han Solo. I mean, what did we see here? I don't understand what we saw here. I mean, what did we see here? That's all I can say. You know, as far as like the characters all kind of act, I don't know. We're going to get into it. But it's this episode was beyond good or bad. You know what I'm saying? It's in a whole other realm, kind of like where the realm where Mortis is at. This episode is that a whole another realm out there to be discussed.
This whole three episode arc here was a house of cards, and it was either going to turn out to be a masterpiece of precision and stand on its own, or it was all going to absolutely freaking crumble. And unfortunately, that's what it did. I think we got some cards missing now, because when it tumbled, they like zipped across the room and went under some furniture or something. My notes on this episode are about a page and a half of big old question marks next to things that were either contradictory or logically didn't make sense or were just reset buttons being pressed. It's funny because this is an episode that had some moments that stood out as big iconic, whoa, that was kind of cool moments. And on the first time watching it, I could almost turn my brain off and enjoy what I was seeing. But even after the first time I was scratching my head, my girlfriend was looking at me like, what is it? And I'm like, that didn't work. And then I went back and watched it the second time this morning to take specific notes, and it's a freaking train wreck. As cool as some of the visuals are, this may be hands down the worst episode of the Clone Wars up to this point. It boggles my mind how this got made without certain aspects of it at some point having people in the production side of things raising their hands saying, excuse me, what? But of course, we'll get to those individually, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you a lot there, Nathan. Actually, I'm going to kind of agree with everybody. This episode was, it felt like 22 minutes of, okay, we really goofed this up, we should undo that, and so on and so on and so on. It was just baffling. I mean, even to the point where they blatantly pushed the reset button on Anakin's freaking head after they showed him the entire future. Like,
we saw the reset button coming. It's just a question of how were they going to do it. We also kind of saw, as Arnie kept pushing the last couple of episodes of Republic Forces, we were expecting some kind of reset button or some kind of, oh, it was all just a dream type moment, which I don't think is exactly what took place, but it certainly was something that could leave you with that impression if you don't think the episode through, which hurts the brain a little bit. But yeah, it really was, I mean, we didn't expect much to be retained from this episode. I don't think we expected them to throw out their own rules and their own ideas from the previous episodes, or at least not to make up their own rules as they went along. There were elements of this episode that seemed like they might have made sense in context if certain things were mentioned in the previous two. But it's like the old thing about you're going to hang a shotgun on the wall in Act 1, you need to use it in Act 2 or 3 or however it is that it's said. In this case, we had characters here pulling out big bazookas out of nowhere that we'd never seen before. It fell apart. And at the same time, all of a sudden, they've got things they could have used in the previous episodes. You know, I'm left scratching my head.
All right. So let's go ahead and get into it. The episode begins with Ahsoka, who apparently has undergone some kind of shuttle repair course. Maybe she did that online, got her degree in 9 weeks or less. She's repairing the shuttle, as Barrett mentioned in his initial impressions, hoping for that figure. And Anakin has now decided he can't leave without the father's blessing, when he was all so ready to just get the heck out of Dodge 2 episodes ago. So he jumps on his little portable speeder. It's convenient, isn't that? It's the size of a backpack, and you can take it anywhere. Flies over to where the father has just buried the daughter, with the dagger, conveniently. And they have a little discussion where he points Anakin in the direction of the Well of the Dark Side, where everything that's going to go wrong in this episode is going to go wrong.
Ding, ding, ding. Time out. Where everything that's going to go wrong is going to go wrong? I already have 3 things at this point that make no sense. Why is Ahsoka fixing the frickin' shuttle? Okay, or multiple things here, not even 3. More than that. Why is she fixing the shuttle? Why is Anakin, the technical wizard, not doing anything for the shuttle and instead sitting around and moping with Obi-Wan? Okay? How can you fix what appears to be in the crash a broken wing by climbing underneath the cockpit with some goggles and a little tool like Han Solo in The Empire Strikes Back, okay? Where did these little Jedi portable speeder bikes come from? Granted, oh, they're neat. They're based on the concept art from Return of the Jedi. They also would have been convenient when Obi-Wan and Anakin are racing by on foot all across this planet in the previous 2 episodes, and Anakin is doing the same racing by climbing up the side of a tower in record lightning-fast, time-bending speed. The father tells Anakin before sending him off to the well, "This place is strong with the Force. Darkness has no hold here." What?! The entire purpose was we didn't want the sun to gain too much power of the dark side so that the dark side wouldn't take hold of Mortis and wouldn't affect the galaxy around it. Now you're saying nothing that he does makes a difference because the dark side has no hold here? What just happened to these episodes? We're in the first 5 minutes, and everything is already falling apart. The cards are tumbling down, and we haven't even gotten to the reset buttons or the visions of the future yet. To me, that opening just kind of left me shell-shocked, wondering what on earth they're trying to do here.
Well, I meant everything's going to go wrong for Anakin. I didn't necessarily mean wrong for the show.
Now, see, the thing is, with the whole Ahsoka, that was one of the only things that really made sense that I really liked in the episode, was that she was down there doing the grunt work. You know, she was actually being a good Padawan. And that really harkened back to what we know as Padawan. She's kind of going to be in a traditional Padawan now, not really talking back. You know, they didn't give us the scene where, you know, they tell Ahsoka to kind of get down there and fix it. And she's like, "Well, why do I got to fix it? You know, I wish we had some clones." You know, they didn't give us that scene. She's actually looking like she likes it. And it kind of makes sense, kind of what you said, Nathan, why Anakin would kind of be standing around, not doing anything, moping around, because he's already kind of taught Ahsoka how to fix things. I mean, that's one of the things he does really well.
I get the idea that maybe this is a teachable moment for her, okay? Maybe he's taught her all these skills beforehand, and now she's the one who's going to fix it. But wouldn't you think, if the teachable moment arrives, you would maybe make use of that perhaps when the fate of the entire universe isn't in play? Where it'd be, "You know what, Ahsoka, I'd like to let you go through and fix it. Forget the fact that somehow you're going to fix a busted up outside of the ship by fixing underneath the cockpit, whatever. But I'd like you to get a chance to fix it. But dear, let's wait and have you try this sometime when our magical, super technological genius Anakin couldn't fix it in a snap and save our butts and save the universe. Because every second we stay here is another second the sun could get his hands on this ship and destroy life and the universe and the Force as we know it." I get the premise. And of course, we've got to have Ahsoka doing something so that when Anakin goes off and Obi-Wan goes off, she is still with the ship. She doesn't play into the episode in any other way. Fine. From a storytelling standpoint, it makes sense as far as getting her to have something to do. But from a logic standpoint, Anakin could have fixed this in no time, more than likely. And yet, he's not even helping. He's sitting there moping about guilt over needing the blessing of someone he just basically told to jump off a cliff, so to speak, when leaving the first time. He turned his back on him. Oh, now that they've crashed, now he gives a crap?
Ahsoka needed to weld the dampening vents. Didn't you hear? That's what she was doing underneath the wing. The whole wing wasn't broken. It was just the dampening vents that were cracked. But I think the whole scene, although it did not make sense, okay? Although logically it didn't make sense. And I think we can all agree here that this whole story arc kind of logically doesn't make sense, you know? And maybe it's not supposed to make sense. Maybe it is a dream. And we'll go into that because I have my own reasons why I think this whole thing could just be a dream. But I like the fact I'm trying to find the gold nuggets in the mud here. And one of the gold nuggets I pulled out was I like the fact that Ahsoka was being kind of the traditional, respectful Padawan, especially after what we've seen her go through, where she's already turned to the dark side and she's kind of already portrayed Anakin when she gave over the dagger and she couldn't help herself, when she's come back to life. And now she's kind of like this new Padawan. And I really like that.
I wasn't thinking, why is so fixing the ship? I was, why isn't Anakin? I think it works actually well. This is one of the few things that I didn't have a problem at all in the episode. Anakin's emotional. And in the beginning of this episode, he's completely turned inward. He is not thinking about escape. He's not thinking about preventing the son from anything. He's totally turned inward on this feeling of guilt. Because yes, in the first episode, he was like, you know, buzz off. I'm not staying here. I don't want to be the chosen one. The second episode completely changed the status quo. The daughter died. And now he's kind of, yeah, I should stay here. Yeah, I should do something. I think that sense of shunned responsibility is back in on. And so he's got his arms kind of crossing downward. He's very turned inward. And he's not even thinking about the ship. And then he immediately drives off to go with the father and get one last talk in with him. And I thought that made perfect sense. A lot of people complaining about that scene, and it didn't that's one of the few things in the episode that didn't bother me.
Not only did the daughter die, but he used the daughter's essence to bring back his Padawan. So it makes perfect sense that he's all messed up about it. Now he's really confused because in the first episode, when he didn't want anything to do with it, nobody was dead. There was no harm done. Now his Padawan was turned to the dark side. He had to use the essence to bring her back. And it makes perfect sense why he would not be thinking about leaving. He's thinking about maybe he owes something to this place now.
I'll buy it. I just think that from an execution standpoint, it didn't feel like it were. The first question I asked watching this episode was, why the heck isn't Anakin helping? I understand him moping, but, you know, moping work, you know?
Well, really, why isn't Obi-Wan helping? He's kind of being a jerk in this episode.
We've never really seen much in the way of Obi-Wan being the type of technical wizard that Anakin has been made out to be. And we, I don't think, have ever really seen any indication of Ahsoka being some heavy technical character. It makes sense that Anakin might have taught her, but have we ever seen anything to indicate that Ahsoka could fix a shuttle that's just crashed all by herself?
Have we seen anything to indicate that Obi-Wan was such a jerk? I mean, he was such a jerk. Obi-Wan was such a jerk in here that Ahsoka was sleeping, was trying to get some Z's, was probably some needful rest since they were all bossing her around. He hands her the tea to wake her up. And he was so much of a jerk that I thought it was the son. Did anybody else think it was the son? Just do it. She's like, I just put this back together. He's like, just do it. I'm like, dang, Obi.
I did think it was the son, but we're jumping a little bit ahead. I do think it was a little bit out of character because Anakin himself says in episode 2 that when he's down in the dumps, it feels better to fix things. So that would have been something more him. Maybe have him down there working on it and he just can't focus enough to fix it. And Ahsoka's there leaning over his shoulder looking. Something like that would have worked better, I think. So Anakin takes off to the Well of the Dark Side. And on his way to the Well of the Dark Side, Anakin meets Qui-Gon, who apparently his name has just slipped his mind because he just refers to him as Master. But it was nice to see Liam Neeson get to come back for more than just a few lines in one episode. He gets a few lines in two episodes.
I like it. I like the fact that we actually got to see interaction between those two, because here's Anakin, you know, he's the one who sort of idolized Qui-Gon back in The Phantom Menace, and for the most part, we never really get to see any effects of that, because, I mean, even in the expanded universe, you don't see a lot of visions and such of Qui-Gon and such. You wind up basically with Anakin carrying around his legacy and all his beliefs about Anakin being the chosen one, but it's Obi-Wan that, of course, is guiding him through his training and everything. It was very nice to see Anakin have a chance to speak to him, not just, I think it adds some credence to the idea that it really was Qui-Gon two episodes ago. It wasn't some trick by the son or by the daughter.
See, again, Nathan, I got the total opposite of that. I thought that, okay, this is, I thought that the Qui-Gon was totally an apparition, that it lent it to that it wasn't Qui-Gon. And here's why. When Anakin walks up to Qui-Gon, Anakin point blank asks Qui-Gon, am I the chosen one? And Qui-Gon says, I believe you will bring balance to the Force. Now, this whole time, Qui-Gon has been saying that he's the chosen one. He's the chosen one. You must train him. Even when he's dying breath, you must train him. He is the chosen one. But when Anakin asked him, am I the chosen one, as an adult, in this process of his life here on Mortis, he doesn't say, of course you are the chosen one. Never doubt. You are the chosen. You will bring balance to the Force. He just says, you'll bring balance to the Force. So I'm like, this can't be the same Qui-Gon that we know and love. It can't be. It has to be a dream.
Isn't that just a matter of, I mean, I know I do this when I'm writing. Isn't that a matter of just not reusing the same phrase instead of him saying, am I the chosen one? Yes, you are the chosen one. You change up the way it sounds and say, am I the chosen one? Yes, you're the one who will bring balance. Or yes, I believe you're the one who will bring balance to the Force. When bringing balance to the Force in Qui-Gon's mind was always synonymous with being the chosen one. He's just choosing another way to say it. I really don't see as how that in any way changes the meaning behind what he's saying or the belief behind what he's saying.
I totally disagree. I think it does. Just like when they're throwing apprentice all around the place. You know, you choose to see it as it's not really rule of two apprentice. It just means someone who's learning from another person. I'm choosing to see it as this ain't Qui-Gon, because Qui-Gon really, really believes that he is the chosen one. And if the chosen one would ask him, am I the chosen one? He would say, yes, you are the chosen one. So I'm using that. I guess I can see that as, I want this to be a dream. I do not want this to have happened. So I guess my focus is looking at the clues that they're giving to say, okay, this can't be Qui-Gon. This has to be a dream.
So after his conversation with Qui-Gon, real or not, Anakin proceeds to the Well of the Dark Side, and there he meets the Son, who shows him everything that he's going to do, from slaughtering younglings to blowing up Alderaan.
Just make sure that whatever you do, when you're plotting out your future, you only use character models that already exist. We don't have a budget for you to see a future in any kind of detail, okay, Anakin? Before we even talk visions, though, I gotta say, I loved the look of the Well of the Dark Side. It is obviously bringing up the imagery, of course, of Mustafar, which in and of itself was meant to bring up imagery of hell and damnation and that sort of thing. I like the fact that now, I mean, at least for me, Revenge of the Sith has been my favorite Star Wars film, probably because of the Revenge of the Sith Stover effect, as I call it, going back and having read the novelization before seeing the movie, I got more out of it. But it's my favorite of the Star Wars films, and this just feels kind of like the Stover novelization. It's going to add a layer of imagery when I see Mustafar thinking it's like the Well of the Dark Side. To me, they could not have picked a better atmosphere for the Well of the Dark Side. Now, how they pull up everything else there, meh. But choosing a Mustafar-like landscape, perfect choice.
Yeah, I agree. The Well of the Dark Side looked really good. And Sam Witwer's voice acting in this scene was phenomenal. He was really good.
And didn't we get music, if I was hearing it right, didn't we get music cues from Revenge of the Sith, particularly, what is it called, Battle of the Heroes or whatever it is, that sort of triumphant type of music, except in this case it sort of trailed off and became a little bit darker as we ended it?
They had a lot of music that was slightly tweaked this episode. I know they had the General Force theme, like Luke Skywalker scene, Anakin was talking to your father, but it was a minor haunting. They did that a lot with a bunch of the episodes, which actually just kind of brought it, so it made it feel more Star Wars. Real quick about the Well of the Dark Side. Image-wise, it was lots of Mustafar and stuff. As a geology nut, though, I have to in there. You cannot stand that close to lava. It makes me crazy to see people just standing there and not asphyxiating or having very bad burns. Sorry. It drives me nuts.
I'm right with you there. I complained in episode 3. I'm like, not one of them broke a sweat. You know what I'm saying?
We've kind of jumped past the Qui-Gon stuff, but speaking of Qui-Gon, he gives that warning, right, to Anakin. You know, remember your training, trust your instincts. This is what will save the day. Nothing about how this episode ends has anything to do with Anakin trusting his instincts and saving the day. If anything, when he trusts his instincts, he goes dark in the Well of the Dark Side. The ending is all about the father acting rather than Anakin. Good job, Qui-Gon, for giving advice that has absolutely nothing to do with the episode.
Again, that's why it's not Qui-Gon. Again, that's why it's a dream, because it's Anakin's. I know we'll get into it about the dream or if it's not a dream. But again, that just reinforces my theory that it's all a dream in Anakin's mind, because he wouldn't give himself Qui-Gon's advice. He's going to give himself what he thinks Qui-Gon would say. You know what I'm saying?
We'll get to it, because I'm going to have to take issue with you on that one, too. We're just butting heads this entire episode. It's like Senate Spy all over again. I like the fact that in the visions, we get to basically see all these different things, okay? It's not that they're trying to show the visions and he's unable to see it. Granted, they're using character models that perhaps, I think we mentioned last episode, maybe this is just that Anakin needs a way to perceive it in his current context, so he's not seeing pregnant Padme as if it would have mattered, because he gets knocked out of his head later anyway. But it's kind of cool to see all these different things. And here he is thinking that if I follow the light side the way I have been, then this is what will come to pass. And he immediately turns to the dark side to join the sun and try to force peace. And you know what? As bad as it sounds, I wonder if perhaps, granted not aligning with the sun, but perhaps the dark side, or at least changing his path, maybe he's making the right choice here to a degree, because if he does stay the light side, he's with Padme long enough for her to become pregnant, long enough for her to possibly die in childbirth, for him to have the visions, and for him to go dark. Maybe if he had gone dark earlier and somebody could have taken him down somehow, all the tragedy might have been avoided. Granted, you need him to go dark in order to bring balance to the Force by setting up everything going to the classic trilogy and all that kind of stuff, redeemed through his children. But really, isn't he kind of making the right choice here to at least divert from the path he was on, because the light side is what leads him to the dark side?
I really like the idea that this is kind of a fundamental character flaw in Anakin. This isn't just something where in Revenge of the Sith, he makes this really one-shot bad decision and it just completely screws his life over. This is his, like, a fundamental flaw. We're seeing it even more here than we have in the past, where he just, anything to prevent horrors, like, he is so adamantly against any kind of problem that he basically throw away all of his teaching and all of, like, the knowledge that he's gained from his Jedi training, just anything to prevent this. And he makes these radical assumptions, like, he doesn't even know what causes these fates, and he just immediately assumes, I'm on a bad track, anything to fix it. He kind of, like, runs the car off the road kind of mentality. And I kind of really like that. I feel like that really gives a lot to Anakin's character. This is the one of the few scenes in the episode that I really liked. And that bit with the Darth Vader helmet right behind him, I thought was really cool imagery in the vision.
To me, it makes sense that some of the character models did not add up to what we know. It's because Anakin is powerful within the Force, so he gets these visions of the future. And again, if this is Anakin's dream, then he would continue to get these visions of the future of his wife dying, but he would see his wife as he sees her now. He doesn't see the complete picture. Even in episode 3, when he's getting visions of Padme dying, he's only really seeing Padme's face. He doesn't really see, you know, the whole body or the surroundings or actually the context of where they're at. So it makes sense that he would see himself killing off Padawans, maybe not the Padawans we see, and becoming Darth Vader, seeing the mask. But I have to totally agree with you, Jen, that it was very interesting to see that this is a flaw in Anakin, that, you know, he's fundamentally going to go to choose the dark side because of the way he feels. And I also think that's an interesting point, Nathan, of did he make the right choice or not? Does the ends justify the means? And you could ask 50% of Americans if stealing bread to feed your family is the right thing. You know, is that something you have to do? Some of them will and some of them won't. You know, so I think that's two good, interesting points that you both bring up.
Speaking of pairs of points, another couple that we could add into this scene. I mean, granted, you can go whole how much of this was real, how could it have affected their lives outside of Mortis and all that stuff. But setting that aside for the moment, it's kind of cool to see something very much like what we saw last week. When Ahsoka went dark, she wasn't saved by her own actions. She stayed dark. She was committed to it. She faced the consequence. She died, or nearly died as the case may be, and it was only the actions of someone outside herself that brought her back to life, or rejuvenated her. In this case, Anakin makes a fatal choice, or makes a dark side choice, a fateful choice, and goes dark, joins the sun, and again, he's falling down that dark side path, and it is only the actions of the Father, a power outside of himself, that brings him back. You go into the idea of essentially salvation versus sin. You have this symbolism here of a person making wrong or sinful choices, at least in Anakin's case, not as much in Ahsoka's case. She was more corrupted, and someone spiraling down and some other figure needing to come in and lift them up. I was spending the entire time in this episode trying to figure out why it was, or what else in the episode it was, that kept resonating with me with that rolling the stone away from the door Christian imagery that they did. And that's the thing that wound up emerging, sort of percolating to the top as I thought about it, as something that does fit that same type of imagery of salvation from outside oneself. You also have this fact that I think, again, just like the Well of the Dark Side is going to add to me some resonance when we see Mustafar in Revenge of the Sith, the fact that the Father himself is the one who's going to decide, you know what, this has to be. Your fate, as tragic as it is, saves the galaxy because of the terrible things that you do that you just saw in that vision. I think that adds even more to the tragic nature of Anakin. I mean, Lucas has described essentially the classic trilogy as mythological archetypes and the hero's journey, whereas the prequels are effectively a tragedy. I think this just adds another layer to that tragedy. Characters who get a chance to glimpse what's coming, others maybe divert them from that, from trying to save themselves from it and keep them going on that fate. The chances for the hero to turn away and having it either from outside forces or internal forces not work. I really think I'm going to see Revenge of the Sith with new eyes after this season is over.
I like both those points. I think the issue that I have the most with that has nothing to do with Anakin. I do see this, he goes to the dark side as the quick and easy answer, and that's his thing. That's how he goes. I see that being presented very well. The issue I have with it is Obi-Wan is there. Obi-Wan sees now that this is how Anakin goes. If things get tough, he's going to go Sith. He doesn't get his mind wiped. There's no reset button on Obi-Wan. So he should have an inkling in episode 3 that, hey, when things get tough, he might join the dark side rather than have him follow around somebody we think's not so great, or maybe we should put him in the library.
Yeah, but this time there was a corrupting influence around him, and certainly there's no such thing like that in Revenge of the... Oh.
Oh, wait.
Again, Dan, you make my point. It's a dream. Obi-Wan is not there. It's all in Anakin's head, because you're absolutely right. Obi-Wan should know Anakin will turn to the dark side. He should have been told. I mean, he should know. And I have my theories that he knows that they know that he's already married, but that's a whole nother podcast. But there you go. He doesn't get his mind wiped. He should know. He doesn't say anything when they wake up.
Yeah, but neither does R2-D2, and he doesn't say anything.
So Obi-Wan is directed to the Well of the Dark Side by the Father. He jumps on his handy little suitcase speeder bike, flies down, and finds Anakin has already fallen. And it is too late, and in a dual effort between the son and Anakin, Obi-Wan is immobilized, and Anakin takes off to leave with the ship, which Ahsoka has fixed and broken and fixed and will break again.
I like the Father's response here in describing what has happened. I'm not sure if it's when he says it to Anakin or if he's saying it to Obi-Wan about the idea of seeing the visions and such, but he makes that comment there, I guess, while Obi-Wan is still trapped down there, so I suppose it is to Anakin, but he makes that comment of, my son broke the laws of time and showed what should not have been seen. And that's some big thing that needs to be punished or set right. So breaking the laws of time is anytime you see the future. Palpatine breaks the laws of time all the time. Luke in The Empire Strikes Back is breaking the laws of time. Any Jedi seer, Anakin in seeing Padme's fate, is breaking the laws of time. A Jedi who senses a blast coming and deflects it at the last moment because they were precognitive, they're breaking the laws of time. Somehow, this has never been a big issue till now.
Well, I didn't take it necessarily as that extreme. More that since these beings are what they are, the son showing Anakin exactly what he's going to do was kind of taking it too far. The Yoda tells us, you know, when we sit down and hang out, that the future is always in motion, so things the Jedi's glimpse may or may not happen. This was more definitive.
Yeah, but then there's the dark side version of it, the Palpatine lines of everything is proceeding as I have foreseen. I mean, the Darksiders are saying this all the time.
Well, that's just because they want to take credit for everything. They don't know diddly-do.
kind of like predicting that the team is going to win on one forum, and then you go to another forum and predict they're going to lose, so that whenever the game is over with, you can point to the forum and say, "See, I told you so."
Exactly.
I do that all the time. That's why I'm so good at the continuity stuff.
So the father completely undoes everything that the son has shown Anakin, wakes him up in his monastery. Obi-Wan and Ahsoka join the party, and the four of them hatch a little plan to take care of the son, who, meanwhile, has gone to his sister's grave and taken the dagger from her corpse. There was some incestuous...
Oh, come on! come on.
There were some incestuous insinuations going on there.
That was the best acting that we had coming out of Whitmer for these episodes. I saw that, and granted, I've been watching a lot of Hamlet recently because the Honors English kids at our school are doing it right now, and I try to help them along because it's my favorite Shakespeare play, but I really got a feel there of Laertes and Ophelia at the funeral, the idea of, I can't believe you're gone, you're the one person that, you know, that I loved, et cetera, et cetera. I wasn't feeling any kind of incestuous type stuff there. That's just creepy. Wouldn't necessarily be out of place in Star Wars with the 9-year-old boy and the 14-year-old girl or the kissing siblings, but seriously, I think that's probably a little too far.
I don't know, Dan. I got that same feeling. I got the same feeling. I'm like, why is he rubbing on his sister? It was almost like he was in love with his sister. Because to me, this man, this being, should not have any conflict with himself being evil. There should be no conflict at this point. He's already turned the Chosen One over to the dark side. His plan is going correct. You know, he should only be there to get the dagger. But I got the same thing. I got that he is in love with her. And, you know, it's kind of that weird Luke and Leia thing going on again, you know, which you're right, Nathan, that Star Wars is not, you know, it's not a stranger to.
He only has glowing red eyes for her.
Yes. And now he's.
I got emo kid from him more than any kind of incestual thing. I got he reminded me of a teenage boy the whole time. Who's like totally like emotionally charged, can't figure out where he is. He's up and down, kind of like a girl on PMS. He's just like, oh, you're the only one who loved me. And he's just kind of like this crybaby dude. And same thing later, we'll see with the father.
So the son has the dagger. The Jedi and the father have their plan, and it's time for the big confrontation. And then, after an attack that I don't think anybody actually thought was going to work initially, the father pulls a move that I totally didn't see coming and stabs himself.
You know why you didn't see it coming, Dan?
Because it was stupid?
Because it doesn't make any freaking sense. Again, it's another one of those continuity things that doesn't make sense. Since when is the son somehow invulnerable to the dagger unless his powers are taken away by the death of the father, whose connection to the son's power has never been noted before either? All of a sudden, daddy must die for the power of the son to decrease enough that he can be killed by a lightsaber blade, whereas before he can only be killed by the dagger, but he could be killed by the dagger. That's why they went and got it. But now, all of a sudden, because I guess the daughter's dead, even the dagger itself won't work. Or maybe the idea was that perhaps you needed to have all these force users dead, otherwise there wouldn't be balance and still somehow Anakin would have to stay. But that doesn't make sense because it's not like the father was light or dark. He saw it as a little bit of both. The whole thing was that he wasn't enough to balance out the son going dark now that the daughter was gone. So it's not like he was just lots of light. So if you remove the son, if they just killed the son, given Anakin the blade, kill the son and he's dead, why would the father have had to die if he was effectively neutral in this entire thing? It doesn't make sense. It's just, let's throw suicide into a cartoon show and begin all those conversations in living rooms across the country when we couldn't have Asajj kiss the clone. It makes no sense.
Well, my question is, wasn't that what the son was going to do in the first place? And I'm pretty sure that's where Jen was going before.
Yeah, that's what made me crazy. I was actually yelling at my TV during this episode because just last week he was force lightning him. He was trying to kill him. And now this week he's just like, oh no, no, this is bad. Don't leave me. It's like, what? You just tried to kill him last week. What?
And he got didn't he get the blade so that he could kill him this week? Come on, Daddy. I'm going to kill you so that I can become weaker. What?
Yeah. Didn't he get the blade so he could kill the old man? The old man did him a favor.
You could, I guess, argue that maybe he got the blade so that no one else could get it and use it against him, possibly. But it doesn't. We never get any of that type of vibe from this. Then again, we never knew that killing the father somehow sapped the power of the son, either.
Well, maybe it only does that if the father stabs himself. If the son had stabbed the father, that wouldn't work that way. Maybe the blade has some kind of... Yeah, I don't even know where I'm going with that. That's
like a mystical sharp mood ring.
Exactly. Well, the intent that it's used with alters how it affects the... Yeah, I'm starting to lean towards a dream thing, too. That would make my head hurt a lot.
It is the emo thing.
Thank
cutting
you.
Other people bad, cutting yourself good.
Well, one secret that was revealed was now I know why he was kept trying to take lightsabers away, is because that's the only thing that had to kill him was a lightsaber through the back.
I wanted to see Anakin's face where it's like, whoa, that worked? I thought we could only kill him with a dagger.
I wanted to see Anakin see my face when that worked. I was like, what? That worked?
See, I was expecting that to go a different way. I was expecting it to be, oh, the father was pretending to throw off the son, and oh, when Anakin went through the son, he kind of got the father too, and now everybody's dead. But
I totally thought the lightsaber was going to go through the father too. I did. I thought it was going to he was going to have to get both of them at the same time. Well, but how does the father die? He dies.
He
like
lost
Adam.
The will to live.
Yes, yes,
he did. Yes, he did.
That is Anakin's. That he's the chosen one. He could kill you because you love him so much. That's Anakin.
No, three, because what does Obi-Wan do? I'm not going to fight. I'm going to hold up my blade and let you cut me. It's three people who lose the will to live around him. I'm waiting for Ahsoka to finally just wind up waking up to this, and that's how she winds up gone from the show.
I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it, because Casanova, he is. Everybody loves him to death.
Yeah, that's the episode we're going to see in season 4. Ahsoka finds out, and because she can't have him, then she just loses the will to live, and... So everybody's dead, and the planet starts to fall apart with lights crashing down on towers in a very end of Return of the King kind of way.
Which, actually, I do kind of like, because we said, I don't know if it was last episode or the episode before, that if there was going to be a way to remove the necessity of Anakin staying there to keep the father, or sorry, to keep the son and the daughter in balance, they would have to wind up either killing them both off or killing them all off or something, so there wasn't a need for anybody to stay there. And that's basically what they wound up doing. The only question really seemed to be whether or not the father had to die to make that all happen, which I'm still not entirely clear on, but it's at least a logical conclusion to the idea of there needing to be balance there. Then again, if the idea was that these were just force users, powerful force users who showed up on the planet and were feeding off the planet, not that they were tied into the planet itself or they somehow were the planet or embodiments of the force, then why is it that when they die, the planet starts to go to hell in a handbasket? Wouldn't the fact that Anakin's there as a super powerful force user somehow keep that maybe from happening, or it wouldn't need to happen at all? Certainly the planet was there before the father, daughter, and son got there. Otherwise, where would they have landed and started getting the force power from? It makes my brain hurt.
It is a brain-hurting kind of thing.
Although, I did like the fact that after the father died, that you saw the rocks, and like you said, things were falling, and it kind of lends to the belief that they've already established in Star Wars that these powerful force users are controlling things all the time, even when you're not thinking they are, as like they established it with the Emperor in Return of the Jedi. That he when he's sitting in his throne, he's actually using the force to control the battle, and that after he died, the battle turned for the rebels because he was no longer out there. And I believe they do it with the Dark Jedi Kaboth in the Thrawn trilogy novels.
That's the same trilogy. The idea that Palpatine was controlling the ships outside was something
right.
That came directly from the Thrawn trilogy. That's all. I mean, it's all EU-ish.
It's all stuff. EU, so they brought the EU here, and I like the fact that the father, after he dies, that he's basically still controlling this planet. He's controlling the levitation of the rocks and things like that, kind of keeping things together, which lent to how powerful he is. So that was one of my favorite things at the end was not so much the cliche, the cave is caving in and we need to get out of here, but so much is that, you know, he was all-powerful, and that when he does die, it does upset some things here.
Doesn't that make you wonder, though, why were the rocks floating in the first place? Did he just show up, gain super force powers, and say, you know what? I really liked that movie Avatar. I think I'm going to make some of these rocks float, and I'm just going to keep them floating as long as I live. That's freaking sweet. James Cameron, eat your heart out. Doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. Also something that is going to have people wondering for a very long time that we haven't even mentioned yet about the death of the father is he fades away in the Force. And they specifically say in the episode guide on StarWars.com that this was intentional, that he would fade away, Obi-Wan would fade away, Yoda would fade away, when of course Qui-Gon did not and other Jedi throughout the Clone Wars do not. At this point, I don't really have a theory as to why that's the case. Unless it had to do with being at some point at Mortis, but Yoda never did. And how is Qui-Gon learning this? Is Qui-Gon learning this while his spirit is there communing on Mortis with the Father, and that's how he can pass it along to Yoda and Obi-Wan, even though he couldn't use it himself because he hadn't had his spirit visit there yet? I really gotta wonder where this whole fading father, but not son or daughter, in relation to them saying it's purposeful thing is going.
Wow, Nathan, I hadn't even thought about that. Thank you for giving me something else to bang my head about for this episode. That doesn't make sense. That was, I did wonder why the father faded away and not the other two when no one prequel time has faded away yet.
The thing falling apart, I think the problem with it that we're all having is they never really defined what these beings, for lack of a better word, are and what their relationship to the Force is. And I feel like they keep giving us contradictory information, and it's really kind of frustrating because they kind of hint that maybe there's some sort of, I guess, for lack of a better word, avatar of like light side and dark side and kind of like a neutral binding them together. Or are they some sort of being that just soaked up a whole bunch of Force power? I feel like they keep giving us these different ideas of what they are, and they never really solidify it because they seem to be just these mortal creatures in some ways, but then some, like, why, if the son, for example, is a mortal person and he just is really powerful on the dark side, why would him turning to the dark side have an effect over the entire galaxy? That just doesn't make sense to me. And I think maybe, I know Dave Filoni worked on the Avatar, the Airbender series, not the James Cameron, and that had a lot of, like you guys were saying in the previous episodes, a lot of Eastern influence. And this actually really strongly reminded me, I actually watched the whole series, I really liked it, of the end of the first season of Avatar. And they have these two kind of beings that represent the spirits of water and the moon. And one of them dies, and the moon itself kind of dies. And it's a very interesting idea. And that kind of, I don't know if that's Filoni's influence or just happens to be a coincidence, but that's kind of what the father's death reminded me of. The whole planet kind of fell apart. Like his being there just kind of held the whole place together. And it was really neat. I like the imagery of that lamp, that kind of crystal shattering and everything. It was frustrating because I felt like I didn't have the whole story. It would have made a lot more impact, I think, if they just explained what these creatures were.
I did not realize Filoni worked on The Last Airbender, but now that you mention that, wow, yes, I can totally see that influence, not only in this episode, but in a lot of stuff. This whole trilogy, wow, that makes a lot of sense.
You know, speaking of getting answers on any of this, it seemed like last week, and still I think this week, at least they're trying to make it clear that these are mortal beings that somehow wound up going to Mortis. They found their way into this realm, so to speak, and managed to harness dark side and light side and that sort of thing, as opposed to being avatars of it, though it does kind of leave us scratching our head as to the end as it's all falling apart. But this is supposed to be another of these big secrets revealed sets of episodes. And they promised, well, okay, the trailer guy promised, and it's just a question of how much you can trust the trailer guy. But they said something about the Chosen One, like the identity of the Chosen One or the fate of the Chosen One or whatever it was they were saying. And that kind of got explained to a degree, that essentially it's like a prophecy that has a microcosmic view and a macro view in that, yes, he was there to bring balance to Mortis. And in that same vein, he is also destined to bring balance to the Force in the universe or the galaxy as a whole. And that sort of made sense. It's sort of a cop-out of saying, well, yeah, it's just two different prophecies or two different parts of the same prophecy. But at least they tried to explain that. And we had the fate of Ahsoka, kind of. And we saw that vision of future Ahsoka. We got a few hints. We don't really know anything about her fate, but at least there's a little bit of a hint of that. But what was the first thing they said in the trailer before they said, what secret would you like revealed first? The question was, or the comment was, the origin of the Force. Where in any of these three episodes did we ever get any kind of inkling about the origin of the Force? Never. And it's another one of these, it seems like we were building up, and then it became this house of cards, this mess that tried to do so much in so little time that it wound up not really working when you finally got the last pieces into place.
I agree, it was a very misleading tag to the entire series, especially that origin of the Force. I can kind of see the Ahsoka thing, because we do see her growing up. So maybe that means she grows up. Of course, then again, kind of think that it was a trick by the son or the daughter, probably the daughter. But the whole origin of the Force, no, we didn't see the origin of the Force, unless we're supposed to believe that it is the father, and or the father, the son, and the daughter, and that they've just always been. But just, yeah, more questions than answers. So the planet implodes, and they're not bothering to make a run for the shuttle or anything. Then magically, they all wake up, and they're being hailed by Rex. And we get a very, was this a dream or wasn't this a dream? Alice just crawled out of the rabbit hole, and what was a week and a half there was just a blink of an eye here. Very confusing messages, and they don't even give us 2 minutes of them all looking at each other, not even 2 minutes, 5 seconds of them all giving each other that knowing glance that, wow, that just happened, but we can't tell anybody. No, we're just going to go straight to the end credits. So,
and it's Iris out before the fans start to ask questions. Iris out!
Can we get into it now, whether it was a dream or whether it happened for real? Where's the evidence? I say it was a dream.
I'm totally opposite. This was not a dream. This was something else, but definitely not a dream. You want to make your case, or you figure you've made your case at this point and I should make my case? Because I got a feeling that I'm probably the one that's on the outside of this one.
I've made my case, but just let me make the point that to agree with Dan, that again, at the end of this whole thing, we have no indication that this happened for real. I mean, there is when the flash goes down and the towers are falling, you see this white flash of light. Then they're on the ship. If the father, the daughter, and the son are all dead, who has the power to get them back on their ship? That's the last piece of evidence why I say it was all a dream.
Okay, here's why I say it's not all a dream. First off, you have the Clone Wars magazine referring to this as a realm that they access through the monolith. And you could say, well, wait a second. Maybe that monolith wasn't real because they wind up at the end. They're just floating there. And Rex says, well, we lost track of you for just a moment. Problem. The monolith shows up prior to the flash that sends them into sleep or whatever, where they then wake up on the surface of Mortis. So the monolith, at least, was real. We also have Dave Filoni referring to the fact that when talking to the writer of this episode, Christian Taylor, I think is what his name was. I may be wrong on that, though, that he should think of this whole planet essentially as one big Dagobah cave, where the sheer amount of Force energy there, of course, is causing the ability to have these visions and all these extreme things to happen. We also have scenes where, first off, it can't be just, even if it was just a dream, it couldn't be just a dream for Anakin, as some people are saying, because we have scenes in which we have Ahsoka and Obi-Wan encountering visions and encountering the father, son, and daughter, and doing all kinds of other activities where Anakin is not present, nor would he have been privy to those actions. Also, on the same note, it can't just have been something only experienced by Ahsoka, Obi-Wan, and Anakin, because father, daughter, and son get their own scenes without any of the Jedi being present. Those scenes, those actions, those events would not have existed had this been only a dream from the perspective of our prospective characters, because the only things that would have existed are whatever they purposely, personally are experiencing. We also have the idea that this does tie into the idea of the Chosen One. It does seem to be something where they spent a lot of time trying to delve into this, and the characters are remembering it afterwards. So even if it was a dream, and I don't believe that it was, I believe that this was a realm, as they've described it, a powerful location, a crossroads of the Force in its own realm that the three of them essentially are zapped into, and being a different realm, time wouldn't be an issue one way or the other. I think this is something where they were pulled in, they experienced these events, they come out, they are remembering it, at least it seems, from what Anakin says about, you know, it's a long story. And this was meant to be something where we get something out of it about Anakin's fate. I can't see them spending 3 entire episodes bringing in Liam Neeson, bringing in Pernilla August, doing all these different things, going into all this philosophy, talking about what Lucas wants to do with this and that, and having it all be a reset button. Granted, at the end, they show up back in regular space. That doesn't mean that the vision didn't happen any more than when Luke walks into the cave and he walks back out. What he experienced did not somehow affect him one way or the other, or his body wasn't somehow in that cave, or the same for, say, Starkiller in The Force Unleashed 2. I'm not buying it. I think it was another realm. It just happened to be something where they're brought back in. And maybe it was a realm that essentially exists as an ethereal plane, and physically they weren't there, but their minds essentially were manifested there. Still necessitates the existence of father, son, and daughter, and therefore not just a dream, as we say.
All right. Now, I myself, I'm of the mind, not dream, but something different plane, kind of like I keep using the Alice in Wonderland, but that's the closest thing that I can put it to in my mind. They've gone, to continue with the analogy, they've gone down the rabbit hole. 3 days, 5 days, whatever it is, pass. They come back mere seconds later, not unlike, well, what happened in the latest Alice in Wonderland movie. She's down there for like a week. She comes back. Was it all a dream? Wait, she still has the scratches on her arm. So that's kind of what I'm seeing with it. So
it really is a lot like Nightmare on Elm Street, right? I mean, you've got this other realm that the characters can be pulled into, so to speak, and we have this being who exists only in that realm. I mean, Freddy was someone who might have started out in regular life, and one way or the other, you know, burning him to death and all that kind of stuff, he winds up being pulled into the dream world. Well, father, son, and daughter somehow find their way into the realm of Mortis, and now they're there, unless they can find a vehicle or something to somehow get them out, something from the outside that would give them the vehicle, both literally and figuratively, to get out of that realm. And in the process, they're pulling people into it and going through all these very surreal, very weird, fantastical type of events, all as part of this broader storyline of what the individual characters need, both in terms of the dreamer, so to speak, and the person pulling them in, father or Freddy. I mean, this really is very much analogous to Nightmare on Elm Street, just without a bunch of teenagers getting themselves killed constantly.
All right. Jen, what do you think?
I'm sorry, Barrett. I don't think it was a dream. I think, kind of going along with you two, that it was, if it wasn't a physical movement to a different realm, then it was at least a mental or spiritual one. And again, falling back on Filoni's love of the Eastern influence in the Airbender series, I can't buy that this was all just a dream. I think they very clearly say, like Anakin clearly says, like, you know, you wouldn't believe it if I told you. He at least knows something happened. The other two don't, like Dan was saying, like, did you fall asleep at the wheel? What's the matter, dude? So I'm pretty sure this was something they all experienced, and I don't think there's enough evidence for it to have been just a dream. I think it was some other level of existence.
All right. So far we're 3-1. One dream, three otherworldly experience, or some type of shenanigans. What do you, the listener, think? Go to our forums at republicforces.com and let us know in our Republic Forces Radio Network poll. Dream, something else, or I wish this whole arc were a dream and I could wake up and see something awesome.
Dream or no dream, this was a way. This was cheating. And if they're going to give us arcs like this, where it's ambiguous out there, you know, and they leave it out there, whether it's a dream or no dream, I think it's cheating. And I think that I think that's cheating. And I don't know how I feel about that. As a Star Wars fan who wants original material, you know, that makes me feel like Star Wars in the Clone Wars. But I don't know if I want this, dream or no dream.
It's really kind of unfortunate because we've had some really good episodes this season. I think this has probably been the best season we've had so far, hands down. And yet here they are running at full speed and we're thinking that they're winning the race. And then somebody just comes out, whoever conceptualized this episode, whether it's Lucas or someone else, just comes out and clotheslines them as they're getting close to the finish line.
We were left with a preview for next week's episode, The Citadel. Very interesting. We get to see the even peel that we were teased in the big preview on the E! Network. And Captain Tarkin? Now, we did see him in Revenge of the Sith for a second at the end, so that it's not new that Tarkin was around prequel era. But is this going to be another case of bringing in an original trilogy character just to bring somebody in from the original trilogy?
I had the same reaction as I did to the trailer that says, "And Greedo. Yes, we said Greedo." And fans across the country went, "No. Please let there be something that he does that is necessary. I mean, granted, we just gave him a new son out of the middle of nowhere for Darth Vader and the Lost Command when that comic series launched recently, but please let's do something positive with the character. The fact that he is a captain at all at this point, you have no idea the research I'm going to have to do on Wilhuff Tarkin and all the different crazy positions and stuff he's been in, but I'm really not looking forward to having to do Continuity Corner for next week.
After this whole arc, I feel like it's like this jarring change to have them back doing this regular Star Wars stuff. I feel like I keep waiting for, you know, Frodo to run by or something. But I'm kind of on the fence about this one. I feel like there wasn't really enough to talk about. I don't know. I haven't read anything new about Captain Tarkin. He was just the cranky guy in episode 4. And I don't really, it doesn't bother me if he does more here as long as they don't make it. Sort of clown character, but it's not like Greedo, where people have this a big attachment to Greedo. I don't think anybody has a big attachment to Tarkin, do they? I don't know. I don't.
Only to his foul stench.
I'm glad you brought that up, because Dooku on the forums had mentioned on the Facebook page, or Nathan's page, Nathan's Facebook page, that will he have his foul stench? I thought that was pretty funny. Will he be holding Vader's leash? No, I for one thing, I'm pretty excited. You know, I want to see the backstory on this, on Will Heasy, you know, Will Huffheasy. You know, he's supposed to be this really, who is this guy? Where did he come from? You know, how does he feel like he's able to stand up to Vader and tell him, release him, Vader, enough of this. You know, so I'm pretty excited to see kind of where the origins of where he's at, who he has to double cross, you know, how does the Emperor, how does Palpatine play in this? You know, does he corner Will Huff and say, you know, you must do this, this, and this? You know, does he start off as a good man? So there's a whole bunch of questions out there that for someone like me who's kind of EU literate, who gets most of his knowledge from what's on film, what's on the screen, it's going to be very interesting for me to see his origins and to see how bad he is or how bad he gets.
I dread this episode for two reasons. One is because, like Nathan mentioned, the tagline is almost exactly like the Greedo. Yes, we said Greedo. Captain Tarkin. Wait, who? Captain Tarkin. Oh, yeah. That's just after the debacle the Greedo episode was. I'm not looking forward to this. Secondly, in Empire Strikes Back, when Han Solo is frozen, it's like it's this great new idea Darth Vader had that they're really not sure anybody's going to survive. And now they're freezing Jedi, you know, for transport to save room because they can ship them cargo that way rather than paying for them first class. That's, I don't know. They're going down original trilogy lane here. I want them to stay in prequel avenue.
Yeah, they're delving into classic trilogy stuff here, but I would have to go back and figure out which comic it was. It may have even been in the UK Clone Wars magazine, and it hasn't shown up in the US yet. I'm drawing a blank on the actual name of it. But there was a Clone Wars story from this era that was a tie-in to the cartoon series that has already had them, for one reason or another, have to be encased in carbonite for some type of mission. So here they are using an idea that while they may think, hey, this is kind of novel, we use it in the classic trilogy, let's bring it in here. Somebody's already even done it in the spinoff materials for their own show.
When I saw that the Jedi were being encased in carbonite, it was a little easier for me because Jedi they have their Jedi trance. You know, they could meditate themselves into some sort of hibernation already. So for me, it wasn't that big of a stretch that they were able to survive the carbonization process, the being frozen carbonite. And that's why for a regular human to be frozen, it could damage them. But for a Jedi, they could, you know, survive the process. So that's how I'm getting it straight in my mind already before I even see the episode.
See, but that's where it bothers me, because carbon freezing wasn't meant for transporting humans originally, at least as far as I understand it, EU based. It's meant to transport Tavanna gas so that it can be used later.
Well, for Lando, that's what Lando says. He says it's not, you know, it's not meant for this. It's meant for this. But, you know, Lando hasn't been the president for a long time. How does he know what it's meant for?
Or the Baron Administrator either.
And he hasn't been around, you know. What's he know? That's
Maybe they're just worried that the Ugnaughts aren't good workers. Maybe it's speciesism saying, you know, we could do this somewhere else, but Cloud City, we could kill him.
And you could say that Lando was just trying to say that to save his friend also. He didn't want Han to be frozen, so he was just trying to come up with some stuff, you know, so they wouldn't use that, so Vader wouldn't use that process. But
maybe Vader was just trying to mess with Boba Fett. Here, Boba Fett's worried, you know, maybe he won't survive. He's worth a lot to me. And here's Anakin slash Vader going, I've done this before. Guys, don't tell him. Just mess with him. Let's see if he pees his pants.
Maybe it'll be all a dream like this episode was.
It's all a dream.
It'd be bad if, like, at the end of Return of the Jedi, the whole issue of if you will not be turned, then you will be thumped on the forehead,
or bit on the arm,
or bit on the arm.
If you will not join me, I will bite you on the arm, and then I will have you. Your Emperor.
You imagine Sidious in Revenge of the Sith, instead of just tempting Anakin to the dark side or whatever, he's like running around going, ay, 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 like a mad dog.
That would be really scary.
That's when Ian McDiarmid goes, I quit.
All right, so next week we are starting a new story arc. Want to thank everyone for joining us to discuss Ghosts of Mortis. I want to thank Jen, Barrent, and Nathan P. Butler for joining me tonight. And we'll see everybody next week.
All right. Thanks, Rockstar.
See you next time.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Barrent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all of the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark, Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a production of Venganza Media Incorporated, copyright 2011, all rights reserved.
You're the best around. Be like,
oh my gosh, did you really just do that?
Yes, I did. Because he's a dark side. The dark side is the pervy side. That's what it is.
And the knife is between her breasts. You know, that's not a... I mean, that's pretty sexual. I'm just agreeing with you, Dan. I'm agreeing with you, Rockstar.
Hey, Barrent, don't be on my side anymore.
I'm glad these roundtables aren't live anymore.
No. Wow.
1, 2, Father's coming for you.
Wow. Nathan sings. Check off that box.
Check off the box.
Woo-hoo. Well, I do want to thank everybody for joining us for a discussion of Altar of Mortis. We hope that...
Or Ghosts of Mortis, as the case may be. And did we notice that Altar of Mortis was spelled wrong on the episode last time? A-L-T-E-R. It's the change of Mortis, not the altar as in, like, where the knife was.
Wait, did I spell it wrong?
Yeah.
Crap.
Someone on the forums pointed that out, too.
Yeah, I didn't even notice it until the forum poster said it.
Hey, you know what? You guys try posting this crap at 4 o'clock in the morning. Get off my case.
That's why I didn't say nothing, Dan.
Nobody was going to say anything until, you know, you called it Altar of Mortis this week.
You know, we all make mistakes, man. You know.
Thanks, Barrent.
Not as big as you made it. Not as big as the mistake you made, but we all make mistakes.
We all make mistakes. Not as big as that whopper you screwed up, but woo!
Yeah, some of us think it was a dream. I'd like to thank Barrent for making sure that this night had something in it that was less, or that was more confusing than Ghosts of Mortis. Again, somewhere out there, Anakin is going, I'm not nearly that screwed up. Not nearly that confused.
Oh my gosh. Wow, next week on Family Action News.
I might be wrong. What the hell did you send me?
I just popped up the Merriam-Webster Dictionary of Brother in Law for you.
I feel like Jen. I can't get a word in.
That's right. Now you don't have feels. Not so nice, is it?
What the?